Dean took a seat in the chair and allowed himself to be strapped down. There was a commotion to his left. He managed to turn his head far enough to see Doc Tanner fighting to break through the crowd and save his son from execution. Ryan tried to help, but only got a step or two in the right direction before the Rousdies seized Doc and threw him back. The other companions were struggling as he was. Ryan turned the full force of his effort to reaching the chair and the red-coated chiller before he could bring down the pipe. It was like walking through molasses. He had to beat back the lethargy that infused his limbs. But with each step, it got a little easier. The new Baron watched his slow-motion approach with amusement.
What do you think you're doing, Carter? Do you think you can get here in time to stop me?
Ryan couldn't answer.
Well, you'd better hurry up then. Get a fucking move on!
It took minutes for Ryan to cross the short stretch of ground. The former Carney Master watched and waited with a leer on his face, confident that he had the upper hand, confident that he could smash the boy's skull with a single blow, even as his father reached out to save him. Sweat poured off Ryan's face. Though it hadn't started to snow in earnest yet, the tiny granules were peppering the square. Ryan was still 10 feet away and moving at a crawl when Kreka lightly tapped the top of Dean's head with the end of the pipe, measuring the range to his target. Then he reared back, cocking the bludgeon over his shoulder, coiling himself to swing for the center field fence.
What the?
Kreka staggered and lost his balance. He caught himself on the chair back to keep from falling. Water and dirt suddenly exploded from the base of the mountain, about 100 yards from where they all stood. Ahead of the twin plumes of black water, flying through the air like artillery shells, were chunks of broken limestone. Rocks crashed down and bounced all around them. The two torrents coalesced, funneling, twisting together, plowing headlong into the earth with their combined might. They blasted through, sending a wall of water and debris 10 feet high, racing downhill toward the square. Baron Kreka was no longer intent on caving in the back of Dean's head. Riveted by the sight of the onrushing wave, he didn't seem to notice Carter closing the distance between them. Ryan could feel his strength and physical control returning. For the last few feet, his legs drove forward with real power, as if their overdrive had suddenly kicked in. His right hand did his bidding, unsheathing 18 inches of panga from its scabbard below his knee. As the one-eyed man reached the foot of the chair, Kreka bolted away, cutting across the square toward the blockhouse entrance, well ahead of the leading edge of the flash flood. There was no time for Ryan to hack through the four leather straps that held Dean pinion. He picked up the chair by the arms and started lugging it and Dean away. He'd gone no more than a few yards when JB caught up to him and grabbed one of the arms. The two of them ran with the chair and the boy between them. Mildred and Christy ran ahead, as did Jack, who'd picked up Lilu and was carrying her in his arms. The companions raced away from the water, beyond the far end of the square, and along the curve at the mountain's base. When they were far enough away, Ryan and JB stopped, put down the chair, and looked back. The wall of water had gouged its own deep channel in the dirt, dividing the square and separating its occupants. The Rousdies who could run had gone the opposite direction and were out of sight. Those still partially paralyzed by the spores managed to move away, but slowly, like their legs were encased in ice, a feeling the companions would never forget. The edge of the flood-choked channel eroded away at the chiller's heels. As the undercut bank gave way beneath them, their bodies twisted and fell, disappearing into the churning blackness. The torrent's main thrust had swung past the front of the blockhouse, missing it entirely. But it was ramping full tilt through the hammered-down shantyville. With falling darkness, it was impossible to see clearly, but it looked like the entire place had already been scoured off the landscape. Ryan looked up at the sky and saw that the spore fall had stopped. The threat of blizzard was gone. The thunder, if there was any, was drowned out by the roar of the draining lake. Beside Ryan, Jack and JB were busy extracting Dean from the chair. Mildred and Christy were comforting the little girl. Ryan was relieved to see them working as a team again.
Is everybody all right? Wait a second. Where the hell's Doc? Did anybody see what happened to Doc?
Baron Magnificent Kreka stood transfixed by the sight of two monumental gushers exploding from the hillside. twin streams of water 10 feet in diameter jetted through the air before burying themselves in the earth, sending dirt and spray flying. The sound it made was like some gigantic engine running wild. It took a second or two for the full import of what he was seeing to sink in. Then a cold finger touched the center of his heart. The source of the water was the burning pool. It had to be. The pool was being emptied. Without the protective layer of water, without the lungfish who lived in it, the entity at its bottom couldn't survive. Without the entity's continued existence and assistance, Krekka's was going to be one of the shortest-lived baronies in Deathland's history. He had to stop the drop in water level before the pool was completely drained. Krekka left the boy in the chair and sprinted toward the blockhouse. He was almost there when a ripple passing through the earth made him stumble over his own feet and fall.
Oh, shit!
As he scrambled back up, to his right he saw the flash flood rip a 50-foot-wide trench in the ground. Somewhere behind him in the failing light, his handful of subjects were running for their lives. If they were screaming in terror, he couldn't hear it over the water's roar. Krekka dashed down the stairway and into the corridor. Plaster and concrete dust rained on him from the remains of the collapsed ceiling. As he ran down the corridor, splashing through the puddles, the tilting floor made him careen into and bounce off the walls. This catastrophe could not have been an accident. Hallucinations or not, massive floodgates didn't just open by themselves. Someone had to have done this on purpose. Since he hadn't seen anyone come out of the blockhouse, he was fairly sure that they were still inside. He had to find him or her and reverse whatever had been done. Pipe in hand, he ducked his head inside the first few rooms along the hall. The dim light was made even dimmer by dirt and dust, but he saw no one. In a far corner, something bright caught his eye. He climbed over the piles of rubble to reach it. The silver lion's head was on the end of a wooden walking stick that had been thrust through the spokes of a red metal wheel. The kind of a wheel that opened or closed a valve. Or a floodgate. Krekka read the warning sign. He pulled out the stick and flung it aside. Then he started to crank the wheel over clockwise, shutting the valve.
Not the best of ideas, dear sir.
Krekka whirled to face a glaring scarecrow of a man. He recognized him at once as one of Cotter's party. It was the old babbling bastard who had to be led around on a rope.
So, old man, looks like you've got your brain on straight. Just in time for me to beat it in.
Doc scampered over the rubble and out into the hall. He had picked up the stick Krekka had tossed aside.
You aren't going to get away from me.
Krekka rushed out into the hallway. The old man was waiting for him.
If you think I am trying to escape, you are sorely mistaken, sir. I just require some room to work.
With that, Tanner did something to the silver handle, and the wood sheath came away in his left hand, revealing a long, tapering, double-edged steel blade.
I don't have time for games.
The Baron charged, holding the pipe out in front of him like a lance. The tremors that still rippled the floor made his course erratic at best. As he veered toward his target, a fluorescent light fixture hanging by a thread gave up the ghost and crashed down in front of him, spoiling his aim. The old man was more agile than he had any right to be. He sidestepped the charge and pivoted. As Krekka rushed past him, the Baron felt something molten hot lance through the back of his tall boot and into his left calf.
I think I have drawn first blood. Most impressive indeed, if I may say so myself.
With a back-and-forth slash of the sword, Doc cut down the light fixtures that blocked his view. He now stood between Krekka and the wheel room. To reach it and stop the pool's draining, the Baron was going to have to go through him. Krekka realized he'd been outfoxed. Infuriated, he made a blind thrust with the end of the pipe, aiming for the old man's face. The sword parried the blow. Before the carny master could withdraw, he felt the sharp bite of razor-honed steel deep in his right shoulder.
Ah, fucker!
Now, no need for pejoratives. Besides, that particular epithet has not been appropriate in my case for centuries.
Will you shut the fuck up?
Is something wrong, sir? Would you like to pass by me?
Krekka charged again, this time swinging. He brought the pipe around at waist height, slashing from right to left, figuring the bastard couldn't possibly escape the blow. The end of the pipe threw a shower of sparks as it hit the concrete wall. The wall was all it hit. The old man stepped back into the doorway out of range. As he did, he squatted low and thrust upward with his sword. The point plunged into Krekka's right thigh. He staggered back, flailing with the pipe to keep his opponent from following up with a second thrust.
You look surprised, Baron Magnificent.
Krekka clapped a hand over his most recent injury and scowled at Doc.
Fuck you!
Why should it surprise you that a man carrying a weapon like this could actually use it?
Time was running out. With his good leg, Krekka kicked the fallen light fixture into the old man's chest and lunged with the pipe. His opponent blocked the hunk of metal and glass with his sword, but before he could bring the blade's point back, Krekka was on top of him. He was within a few inches of getting his big hand wrapped around the old man's scrawny throat when he caught a flash of silver from below. The sword's heavy carved metal handle snapped up in a crisp, accurate backhanded strike that he couldn't deflect. His cheekbone shattered and hot blood sprayed down his suddenly numbed face. Falling forward as his knees buckled under him, he took another blow from the sword's pommel on the crown of his head. The third blow nailed him square in the back of the head. Everything went black. Krekka toppled to the floor on his face. Doc cradled the palm of his right hand, which bled from a long, shallow cut that he'd given himself by gripping the sword stick barehanded. There had been no time to get the blade's point around, so he'd had to make use of the pommel. And once he'd gotten started, he'd had to follow up with successive similar blows before the Baron could recover. Doc took a soiled linen handkerchief from his frock coat's pocket and tightly bound his wound. He knelt beside the fallen man. There was blood everywhere. Krekka's blood and his own. He tried to locate a pulse in the man's neck and couldn't find it. As he leaned over the Baron, the ceiling tiles on the floor around him started to move. They were floating, bobbing. The water in the corridor was no longer a standing puddle. It was flowing in a current, and it was already an inch deep. Doc looked toward the hallway entrance and saw the steps had been turned into a series of low, feeble waterfalls. The river he'd created was starting to flood the blockhouse. He dashed into the room behind him and spun the red wheel, reopening the emergency drain valve as far as it would go.